There has been lots of buzz about this topic. I think ABC7 Chicago did a story on this where a couple loses their life savings. A couple's life savings vanished. They lost more than $300,000 during the purchase of their dream home in a scam that could happen to anybody. There's very little homebuyers can do to protect themselves against this scam, which the FBI said is a crime drastically on the rise. So far in 2017, thieves have targeted $1 billion in real estate transactions. I know as a realtor myself, I got an email from the National Realtors Association with huge screaming headlines like, "Beware of this scam. Let your clients know." So I thought it was a great topic to talk about and shed some light on. Stephanie Posey, attorney at law at Posey Law Group, LLC, is joining me. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming in studio and talking about this topic.
Thanks for having me.
So, Steph, before we jump into this, how long have you been practicing law?
Since 1999.
Why did you choose real estate law?
I think it's the friendliest form of law.
Because being a lawyer is like, tough business, man.
It can be very tough, yes. Yeah.
Your husband's an attorney too, right?
He is, which makes, you know, arguing at home fun.
Yeah, how is that? Before we get into this whole topic, two attorneys in a household. I mean, who wins usually?
Never a dull moment. Well, I try to win as much as possible.
Yeah, and if he's smart, he'd let you win.
Yes. I try to tell him that all the time.
Yeah. But, I mean, realistic. So if you're having a debate about something, does he get into the lawyer? You guys get into lawyer mode?
Sometimes we do. It depends on what we're talking about.
So what's the most heated topic?
We don't have a court reporter sitting next to us all the time, but occasionally that does. That does happen.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you let your kids be the jury?
Well, actually, my son, my 5-year-old,
Ben,
he's my associate, my young associate.
Yeah. He takes mom's side most of the time.
Yes. Well, nice. Of course.
Well, so you've heard of the scam, and we talked about this off air. What do you think about this? Why is this all of a sudden such a huge thing?
Well, it's a big problem. So the American Land Title Association, or ALTA, they in 2016, I just read this, that there's a 480% increase in this type of fraud. And the reason is because it's low-hanging fruit for these thieves. They are very patient. They are hacking. It's hacking.
But how do they know the timing of the transactions? Somebody on the inside, right? There has to be somebody on the inside that knows what's happening here.
No, it's an email hack situation. So they will, they look for realtors and they look for title company emails and they watch them. They find an area that they can get in. And once they're into the email, they can monitor the language being used in the emails. They know approximately when the wire transfer is going to happen, and then they jump in. Because typically at the end of a real estate transaction, there's a lot of emails going back and forth from the lender, from the realtor, from the attorney, to the title company.
But isn't that all supposed to be secured? Like, isn't a wire transfer? Because how are they hacking it from the bank to the other to the buyer or the seller's account?
Well, what happens is the title company, they are the receptacle of all the money. So they are the
insuring party. They are the insuring party, correct?
Well, yes. Yeah. So, but they have a really big role because they are collecting the money from the seller side. So they're making payoffs on the seller side to say if the seller had a mortgage on the house. Well, that mortgage has to get paid out. So there's wires coming in and wires going out. So if you're a buyer, you may be wiring money for your down payment, for your closing costs, that gets wired in, and that money is then used to pay the various people who need to get paid for the transaction, whether it's the surveyor, the title company fees.
The attorney,
right. Everyone's getting paid. So there's a lot of instructions that are coming in. And what they're looking for is they're looking for that timing. And once they find the timing, it's very easy to just slip in. So the analogy that I use, it's like if you're not taking steps, if all parties, not only the realtor, not only the buyer and seller, not only the attorney and the title company, if they're not all doing what they're supposed to do, it's like having a house with all of the windows open and all of your most important belongings laying on your dining room table. So there's steps that all the parties could do to close those windows to make it less likely.
I mean, in these situations where these are situations where an attorney is involved still, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So or you think that an attorney's involved, a bank's involved, a title company's involved. So between those three parties, and I mean, because I think the least amount of responsibility probably lies on the homeowner, because you're, you know, in the midst of this emotional purchase, and you know, you're not thinking like, oh my God, I need to protect my asset in this, because the bank's doing it. That's what they do, you know, and the attorney's there to protect me, and I'm paying the attorney to do that.
The thieves are relying on that though, because if you as a buyer aren't taking steps like making sure that your team, your realtor, your attorney, and your title company are doing their part or doing what they're supposed to be doing, you're the one leaving that window open. So
how is this
everybody's responsible?
What have banks done now? Like, how are they taking it? Like, and ultimately, this couple here loses $300,000. Who's liable for that? Who's going to be eating that?
That is a really good question. And there's going to be fights. There's going to be finger pointing. It's hard to tell, because when a wire instruction comes in, what these thieves are doing is they are mimicking actual letterhead. So they'll take the attorney's letterhead. They'll take the title company's wiring instruction, which is on their letterhead. So everything appears to be what it's supposed to be.
All right, walk me through this, because sure. I'm trying to understand at what point does this slip through the cracks. Is it so they know that there's a window and timing? So if a title transaction is going to happen for a certain period of time, like I know when we bought and sold many homes, we sit in our attorney's office, and it's usually a 4-hour process or so, and that transaction is happening while I'm sitting in his office. I'm not really doing any emailing. At least when I was doing it, I wasn't necessarily communicating via just my attorney. So that timing has to be so precise to say, okay, we know in the next hour or so that the transaction is going to happen. I'm slipping in my fake letterhead. I'm speaking as a third party hacker here.
Sure.
I'm slipping in my fake letterhead. I'm slipping in the fake attorney letterhead. I'm adding a fake bank account that's going to route this money that's going to supposedly go into the, you know, seller's account or escrow. How? I mean, this is like Tom Cruise stuff. Like, you know, this is crazy, you know, Mission Impossible.
Usually you're the last person to know, and everyone's surprised at the closing table when it happens, and hopefully it doesn't happen. But often your wire instructions have gone out a couple days before your closing. So you're going to close on a Friday. Well, the title company will have already sent out those instructions the week before. And so if you're particularly organized, you will, many times people will have already wired the funds days before the closing. And by that time, it's too late. They say that within 24 hours is your best chance of recovering most, if not all, of your money. So the longer you wait, and the less precautions that you and your team have, the more vulnerable you are. So really, there's no, right now, I'm not aware of anything that people can do to be 100% certain that this won't happen. The best thing that you could do is to make sure that you're not only prepared as a buyer or seller, but that your team of experts that you've hired and are working with, that they're doing their job as well.
You need to have encrypted everything, you know, pretty much through this process. Now, we have to take a quick break. We're talking to attorney Stephanie Posey from the Posey Law Group. Stephanie, how can people get a hold of you? And we will take your questions, folks. 312-981-7200. Stephanie will be with us for one more segment.
You can reach me at Stephanie, Stephanie, at PoseyLawGroup.com.
What if you bought a new home and you go to your closing and you're in the transaction phase, and all of a sudden the money doesn't show up in the seller's account? You're sitting in your attorney's office and nobody knows where the paper trail is. All of a sudden, $300,000 disappears. It's happening, folks. This is a big scam, a cyber scam that's going on right now in the real estate world, and it's really important to talk about it. And joining me is attorney Stephanie Posey from the Posey Law Group. Stephanie, thank you for hanging with us. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
And, you know, people are freaking out over this topic. You know, all the news stations are doing stories on it. Legitimately, there's been close to $1 billion lost in 2017 from, you know, this real estate scam. We're trying to answer the question of how and who's responsible at the end of the day. And Lori, one of our listeners, is calling in and has a question. Hey, Lori, thanks for calling the show.
Hey.
How's it going? So, good question here. Tell us what exactly you're wanting to know why the buyer loses money, right? Not the bank.
Yeah. I mean, for the love of good, you are getting an attorney. You've got everything is being wired, which is all supposed to be lack proof. And somewhere in there they screw up. That's not the buyer's or the seller's fault. It should be the bank or, you know, whoever did the wire inappropriately. If they didn't check all their P's and Q's, they're the ones that should be out the money.
I'm with you, Lori.
Seller.
I can't wrap my head around that either. Steph, why is that the case?
So the tough part is that the instruction itself, so the wire number is correct. And you, the buyer, are authorizing the wire transfer. So you're signing off. So it's like when you are, if you pay your bills online at your bank, you are, when you click send, you are authorizing that bank to make that wire transfer. So the bank is under the assumption that, hey, these are fine. Why would they challenge the wire instructions? Just as the buyer, when they receive these fraudulent instructions, unless they know to ask questions, you're relying on fake instructions that didn't come from the title company, that didn't come from your realtor, that didn't come from your attorney. So you as the buyer, one of the things that you could do to protect yourself is to ask questions. What I always advise my clients to do is not only to watch out for weird emails, and you're going to be getting a lot of emails at the end of the deal right before you're ready to go to the closing table. And you need to read those carefully, because some red flags might be that a name is misspelled, or there might be incorrect grammar or weird spelling mistakes. Those are usually mm-hmm. telltale signs.
Wait, this is an email that I'm going to get.
You would get that from you may be getting multiple emails from your lender, from your attorney, maybe even from your broker, and also from the title company.
At some point in this juncture, because Lori, I agree with you, this seems like at some point there has to be a third-party responsibility. And doesn't the bank insure these transactions?
Right.
Because once they find out that there was fraud here, don't they at that point step in and say, okay, obviously this wasn't the homeowner's fault or the buyer's fault, or so do they then come in and say, okay, we'll remove the responsibility from you?
Well, if they can, because often by the time the party realizes what has happened, the money is long gone. So the money has already been transferred from accounts to accounts to accounts. So it's all the way over on the other side of the world.
How are these criminals cashing those checks? Like, how are they withdrawing this money? Are they is it instantly going into a Bitcoin account or something like overseas or...
Those are excellent questions, but that's why you have to be careful. So what I tell my clients to do is, for one thing, use a reputable title company. Make sure that you're using a title company that is using encryption services.
So this company here, Citywide Title Insurance, are they a big company?
They're one of the big companies. Just because it's a big company or a little company, it doesn't mean that it's immune. Certainly, bigger companies may have more sophisticated encryption devices, but that's just a question that you should ask mm-hmm. those title companies.
Okay. Lori, does that answer your question there, or not so much yet?
Not so much. I still don't get. She's sending that, I'm going to get an email, and she said, she also said, which I don't understand, I don't remember getting emails during my closing, but... Also, she says there tells her buyers or sellers to ask questions. What questions?
So what I tell my clients is when you get wire instructions, and you're going to get only one instruction from the title company, and it's basically going to be an account number. And this is only going to happen if you have to bring money to the closing table. If you have to bring more than $50,000 to your closing, the title company is going to require you to wire those funds. Anything less than that, you should definitely just bring a cashier's check, and then you don't have to worry about this problem. But if you have to bring more than $50,000, typically it's going to be it's going to need to be wired. And once you get that instructions, if you get more than one wire instruction, that's a big red flag. You have a problem. What I tell my clients, once you get that wire instruction, pick up the phone, get a live person on the phone from the title company, and just verify it. And then secondly, the second thing you can do is once you've wired that money, call that title company back and make sure, hey, did you get this money? Because they'll see it hit, just like your bank will see it hit. Or if those of you that use the Chase instant payment, you can see when money is going to hit your account. So you can verify with them as soon as possible that it was a legitimate transfer. And if you find out, if they say, hey, you know, I don't have it here, then you know you have a problem.
Yeah,
and
a
the
big problem.
Sooner you can do that, the better.
It is too late. Lori, thank you so much for the great question. We really appreciate it. Thanks for holding on through
okay.
the... So yeah, it just, to me, it still seems like... So then what? Am I suing the bank at that point to say, okay, well, you have to take some responsibility? Or there, you are then. You're basically getting to a giant mess, a big lawsuit
yes.
with every party. Because at that point, I'm suing the title company. I'm probably going to sue my attorney.
Right.
I'm suing everybody because I'm the one that's lost... Well, not me. I'm speaking third party. Of the $300,000 that this couple lost in this news article here, I'd love to follow up with this news story to see, did they ever reclaim their money?
You hope so.
Jeez Louise. I mean,
it's
crazy.
It's a tragedy.
Huge tragedy.
And there's definitely things that everyone can do to prevent that type of tragedy from happening again.
Stephanie, how could people get a hold of you if they are going to a closing want some assistance in the process to make sure they don't get screwed on stuff like this?
They can reach me at Stephanie@PoseyLawGroup.com.
Awesome. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, folks, this is a hot topic. Please, please, please check with all parties involved. If you're about to do a closing, make sure this doesn't happen to you. And if you want to look up the story that I'm referring to, just go to abc7chicago.com and put in real estate wire fraud, and you'll see the story. They even have a little news clip about it.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Ah, yes. The music has started. The decor is up. We've been decorated in our house since before Thanksgiving.
How often do you start, or how early do you start?
This year we started 2 weeks ago. Because my mother-in-law moved, and she had a whole bunch of Christmas decor she was giving my wife and us. And we brought the bins home, and the kids, of course, started playing with the bins. And can we decorate? I said, okay, we'll decorate. So we decorated portions of the house early. Then we put our tree up. So we've been, like, full-blown. The only thing we haven't done yet is the exterior lights.
Perfect excuse to spend time with the family in a fun
oh,
way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We put the Christmas music on, and, you know, my wife baked some cookies.
I could do this all year. I love Christmas. I love Christmas music. I love Christmas decoration.
I do, too. I don't know about all year, but I could give it a couple months.
I wouldn't mind a Christmas in July.
Sure.
You know,
could do that.
With Speedos.
With Speedos, yes. With green and red Speedos. I'm with you, Dave. All right. Speaking of light, we're talking to Elizabeth, I think it's Sturcelli, is that right?
Events. Yes, it is.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you? She's the marketing events assistant over at Brookfield Zoo, and it's a little bit looking like a Christmas time at the zoo right now, isn't it?
Yes, it definitely is. We have lights, lots of lights up all over the place.
You know how excited my son is? We go to the Brookfield Zoo like pretty much year-round. We'll be like 30 degrees and we'll still try to go because my son is a Brookfield Zoo freak. He loves it.
Yeah, it's a great time for everybody, and we are open 365 days a year. So, you don't have an excuse that we're closed on any day, even in the snow.
And I try to make the excuse to my son. He just doesn't buy it, though, because he knows those polar bears aren't cold. So walk us through some of the events that are happening in the next month or so. This is your 36th annual Holiday Magic presented by ComEd and Meijer. It takes place on Saturdays and Sundays only.
It's Saturdays and Sundays, so December 2nd and 3rd, 9th and 10th, 16th and 17th, and then the 26th through the 31st. So right after Christmas, we go all the way through New Year's.
And it's open at 10 a.m.?
10 a.m. to 6 p.m., well, during the day, and then we're open all the way to 9 p.m. for the lights.
So if you just want to come and experience the lights, I could get there around 5:30 or so and stay till 9?
Yes, definitely. Once the sun goes down, you know, the lights definitely pop out a lot more. All of our actual holiday activities start at 4 p.m. So we have a Santa starting at 4, and then we also do our Holly Jolly Theater, which that starts at 5, where we have some community groups that do some performances, a lot of dance groups, some church groups that do some singing. And then we also have those funny little people that come at the 6 o'clock hour.
What are the funny little people?
So they are two elves, It's Wally and, oh gosh, I can't think of the female name. And they do a presentation even every night of dancing to some holiday music. And they're really, really great. Everybody loves them. They've been coming for many years now. And they're just a really fun, I don't know how to describe them other than
elves. I mean, I think you nailed
it. Yeah,
you nailed it when you said Santa's elves. I think that's a great description. Now, you guys are having a huge 41-foot tree this year, and you're going to have a big lighting ceremony, right?
Yes, December 2nd at 5 p.m., so this coming Saturday, we will light our 41-foot tall talking tree. So, after the ceremony, you can hear Ferdinand is his name. He does some fun jokes and interacts with the guests. So it's really a kind of.
So is it like a big electronic tree that has or is there a guy that literally hides in there named Ferdinand?
No, he doesn't hide in there, but he does. It's more behind the scenes where he sits. But yeah, it comes, the voice comes right out of the tree. So it's really neat.
That's pretty awesome. My son is getting very excited. He's actually here in the green room right now listening to this. And you know I'm going to have to go, and I'm excited about that. So, like, tell me about the crowd control. Is this, like, a big deal? Is there, like, thousands of people? Should I get there early?
Yes, definitely recommend people coming early, especially on a, you know, a little bit nicer weather day. It does get crowded. You know, people have been coming for 36 years, so people come, you know, as kids, and then they come back and bring their kids when they get older. And, you know, we even have grandparents that come that have been coming since they were a lot younger. So it's really a great family tradition. You know, there's special food and drink options, such as, you know, we do our cookie decorating and, you know, some spiced wine for.
I was going to say, is there adult drink options in this?
There are some adult options. We have some seasonal beverages, which is, you know, always helps warm you up a little
bit. Certainly. You know, one of my favorite things you guys do is the ice carving demonstrations. I always find that so fascinating.
I am right there with you. I love them. And, you know, each year we have a different ice carver, and they are so creative. And I'm just amazed. Each block of ice that they start with is 400 pounds each night.
Jeez.
And then they do two blocks each night. And then it's great when they are all out on the stage. It's really neat to see all of the different.
And is that local talent, Elizabeth, that you're bringing in? Or you guys ship these artists in from all over?
Nope, they are local. We work through a company to bring them in, and they're really great. The guys are always super nice, and they're really great with the crowd as well. You know, asking a lot of questions, and you know, taking ideas of what people want to see carved. So it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. I'm really excited about this. And so the displays. It says you guys will have some new light displays throughout the park, and then this giant 20-foot lit orb. You can actually walk through this thing?
Yes, it's really neat. It's going to be it's huge orb that's fully covered in LED lights. So it'll be able to like have some different dancing lights around it, and then you can walk through it. So it's a whole experience that you'll get to encounter all the way around you. So you can be inside and see all these lights around you. So it's a really neat feature that we have coming. And then we also have giant animals. And when I say giant, they're like 18 feet tall lit structures of a bear, a bison, and a giraffe.
And I'm assuming very good selfie opportunities.
Exactly. That's our goal, is to create some really neat photo stations that you can kind of take some great family photos with these giant lights behind you.
How do the animals fare through all this? I mean, do they love the attention? Do they need some downtime at night?
Yeah, they get downtime. You know, I think they're pretty used to the crowds, and I think a lot of them like it. We do some singing to the animals, and sometimes you'll see some interaction. Kind of they notice. We sing to the reindeer and the bears and the big cats through every night of Holiday Magic, and you'll see them kind of come up and take a look and see what's going on. And we also do special zoo chats as well, so you can kind of learn a little bit about each animal or some of the animals a little bit more in depth as well. But the animals seem to really enjoy it. You know, they get a little extra attention each day.
That's great. You know, I love that fact that the zoo, I live in LaGrange, so to me it's so close. We're there all the time. And just to be able to experience that slice of nature that not many other people get to experience if you don't live in a big city that has a zoo. You know, to me it's just so grounding and so amazing. At times we'll just go into like the gorilla exhibit and just stare at the, you know, the monkeys and the orangutans, and it's just fascinating to me. I mean, maybe I'm a geek, but that to me is just amazing.
No, and you know what? That's one of my favorite parts about walking or working at the zoo. You know, anytime I want, I can get out of my office and go take a look and kind of experience those animals and, you know, see them, you know, interacting with each other and just, you know, enjoying where they're at. So it's I enjoyed the zoo even before I started working there, and I still love it.
Elizabeth, quick question. This is a sidebar. You know, there's a giant exhibit where I thought there was a lion at one time. I think it's the south entrance, and you come in and you make that left towards the penguin exhibit, and there's that empty big exhibit that's been vacant for quite some time now. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. It used to be Baboon Island, so we used to have the baboons there.
So is anything ever going to come in that space? I've been waiting. My son asked, we walked by, Dad, what's ever going to happen in there? Can you spill the beans? Is something magical going to happen there soon?
I am sure there is. Honestly, I don't know the plans. You know, I work with the events, so I know that there's constant talks about using that space, and they're always coming up with new and creative ideas of what to do with that, because that is such a great location for something. So I know that they're working on with something there, but I honestly just don't know what.
All right. Well, you got to keep us posted here. And you guys have some info on some free dates too.
Sure. You know what? Hold on. Let me see about that. Just off the top of my head, I know that Tuesdays and Thursdays are free coming up through February. And then I think we have Saturdays and Sundays coming up as well in January.
Awesome. And what's the website where people can find out more information about the holiday events and everything about Brookfield Zoo?
You can find more information on our website at www.czs.org, and then you can go right to Holiday Magic right there. And then we also have, with that, our Zoo Year's Eve information as well, which we do a big Zoo Year's Eve celebration on the 31st.
Fantastic. Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking the time. Say hello to the gorillas for us. I know Eli's a big
fan. I will, for sure.
All right, take care.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Okay, have a great day. Bye.
So, Eli, let's talk about this issue you have with not going to the zoo. I think I'm going to have to personally take you. I mean, when's the last time you've experienced the gorilla exhibit over at Brookfield? It's amazing, dude. Like, it's the evolution of human beings.
Yeah, there's no knocks on it. I just haven't went since I was probably like 3 foot tall. So,
yeah,
no excuses, though. I got to go.
No excuses, man. It's part of the criteria to be a social media intern on our show. Is you have to experience the gorillas.
About to go right now.
In a Speedo for Dave.
In a Speedo.
Because Dave.
So next summer I have to wait.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. Dave said that would be
nice. No, that's...
So our outing here, our WGN Radio Frank Fontana Show outing, will be Speedos at Brookfield Zoo.
Smelling like a gorilla.
Smelling like a gorilla when you're done.
Yeah, it's always fun to be at Brookfield Zoo, especially with this time around of the year. I love it. I went last year, and my grandmother loves to go, and all the lights. You can't go wrong with
You know
going
where
to the
we're
zoo.
Going this year? Speaking of holiday fun stuff, mm-hmm. We're doing that Polar Express, me and the family. Have you been on it?
No, I have not.
Eli?
No.
Yeah, so I guess we get on by our train stop in LaGrange, and we take the train into the city and around town, and I heard it's fabulous. And they really recreate the movie Polar Express, with Tom Hanks.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's in character, and they have, like hot cocoa and snacks on the train, and they go through these scenarios, and it's supposed to be awesome. I mean, I've heard people talk about it, but this is the first year that we'll ever experience it.
We got to bring them on the show.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Yes, I love the idea. Thanks for the tip.
I know a producer that could work on that, and he likes Speedos.